Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and t-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the Norman Bates murders in the film Psycho. Here's what you need to know. It's a cold December night when the young secretary, Marion Crane, takes a wrong turn and finds herself in front of a flickering sign reading The Bates Motel. She had experienced the most stressful day of her life, but now she could relax for the night. Just one day earlier, she'd been in a downtown Phoenix hotel, wrapped in her lover's arms, lamenting that they'd never be able to marry because of his debts. When she returned to work at the real estate office, a drunken, loudmouth client flaunted $40,000 in cash, which he was using for a new home. Marion's boss instructed her to deposit the $40,000 at a bank, but Marion had other plans. Instead, she packed a suitcase, took the cash, and headed to Fairvale, California to share her new fortune with her lover, Sam. After narrowly evading a suspicious state trooper and trading her car in for a used Ford at a local dealership, Marion was relieved to find shelter at the dimly lit motel. There, the nervous but friendly innkeeper, Norman Bates, checks Marion in and invites her to dinner. While settling into her room, Marion overhears a disturbing argument between Norman and his mother. Later that evening, Norman admits to Marion that he has a strained relationship with his mother. Marion returns to her cabin, resolved to return to Phoenix with the money. As she washes her guilt away in the shower, a shadowy figure appears. Viciously stabbing Marion as her blood washes down the drain. Norman discovers a trail of blood at his house and finds Marion's body in the shower. Horrified, he quickly cleans up the crime scene, puts the body and belongings, including the stolen money, into the trunk of her car, rolls it into a swamp, and anxiously waits as it sinks beneath the surface. A week later, Lila Crane confronts Marion's lover, Sam Loomis, about her missing sister. a private detective named Arbogast, confirms Marion is suspected of stealing $40,000 from her employer. Arbogast arrives to investigate the Bates Motel and demands to see Norman's mother. Stammering, Norman refuses, arousing Arbogast's suspicions. He calls Sam and Lila to check in and then makes his way up to the Bates residence. Upon entering the home, a figure emerges and stabs Arbogast. Fearing something has happened to Arbogast, Sam and Lila speak with the local sheriff. He tells them that Mrs. Norma Bates died 10 years ago, along with her lover, in a murder-suicide. Back at the house, Norman carries his mother down to the cellar for safety as she protests. Desperate for answers, Sam and Lila pose as a husband and wife and rent a room at the Bates Motel. While Sam distracts Norman, Lila searches the old house for clues. Meanwhile, Sam begins accusing Norman of stealing the $40,000, and Norman knocks him unconscious before heading back to the house. Lila hides in the cellar and notices Mrs. Bates, sitting in her rocking chair, her back to Lila. Lila taps the woman on the shoulder, only to see the mummified corpse of Norma Bates. She lets out a blood-curdling scream just as Norman Bates, dressed in his mother's clothes and a wig, lunges toward her with a knife. Sam appears in the nick of time, just managing to overpower Norman Bates. Fun Facts, aka Death Stats. During the film, we see Norman Bates kill Bates hotel guest Marion and private investigator Arbogast before learning that Norman has also killed his mother and her lover 10 years prior. When Psycho was released in 1960, moviegoers were not allowed to enter the theater after the movie had begun. Norma Bates was voiced by three different people, Paul Jasmine, Virginia Gregg, and Jeanette Nolan, in an attempt to give Norma a vaguely uncanny, ambiguous voice. Marion Crane, Norman's first victim, was played by major star Janet Leigh. When she was killed abruptly 47 minutes into the film, audiences were shocked. The concept of a false protagonist had never been utilized in film before. The infamous shower scene took a full week to complete, using fast-cut editing of 78 pieces of film and 70 camera setups. With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And our very special guest today is friend, writer, Jack Dolgen. Hi, Jack.
Salutations. Again, hello.
Jack, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a really long time coming, and it's an honor and a privilege.
Are you a psychopath?
I wish we could. We had video of how he's holding his mic right now. It's very creepy.
My understanding of what this is that I'm supposed to be psycho. Is that not right?
Yes.
I should have read the email.
That's okay. You're not familiar with the format of the show. We get it.
I know the show. I'm an avid listener.
Jack, you know, we like to start off the show by asking our guests, what is something that is recently alarming you? What is something that's keeping you up at night? And if I know Jack, and I do, I know there's a lot keeping him up at night.
I don't strike you as a cool as a cucumber type, Rebecca. That is unfair.
You're like a braided bread.
I'll tell you something. A challah bread, if you will. Yeah. I am concerned about and alarmed by how corny and cheesy all of culture has become. Oh. That's a little concerning to
Pray
me.
Pray tell.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about that. We're all around the same age, and maybe this is just a rite of passage. As you get older, you start to not you have your criticisms, but. In my coming up, the purpose of the friend group was to ridicule out all of the lameness.
Okay,
sure.
And it was very effective, and that's how you end up creating stuff. And I feel like that the ridiculing out of lameness has stopped, and now lameness is just very widely accepted, and everything is getting very, very corny and cheesy.
Is there like
about it culturally?
Do you have an example of like one specific lameness that's bothering you?
No examples. No.
Just a general lameness.
This is not painting with a brush. This is throwing the paint.
Yes.
But Jack, it sounds like it's just in your friend group. There's a lameness.
Yeah, maybe you need some new friends.
Hey, friends have gotten lamer as we have stopped ridiculing each other.
Right.
But are you suggesting, like, for example, like the Beat Poets couldn't kind of exist in society today because they were sort of the cool kids, right, of the 50s? Or like the French New Wave couldn't happen. It was like the cool, weird art being made. Is that what you're kind of going for? Like there's not that kind of, there isn't that today?
Exactly. Those are both punk rock movements, right? Where's the punk rock?
What's the modern day punk rock?
Oh, actually, all that's really stupid and, you know, and corny and lame. And here's the real deal shit.
Well,
what's that?
I blame the younger generations, really. We're still being punk out here. And
we're still punk rock.
They're forcing their lame.
We sound so old and jaded and lame, honestly.
No one has ever been more punk rock than Rebecca Delgado Smith.
Well, I mean, this is, yes, you were going to say something, Chris, before I transition?
Never mind.
No, well, we're going to leave it at that.
I don't know, man. You know what? I take it back. Okay, let's continue. Maybe I'm wrong.
Okay.
Because I think I also contribute lame stuff to. No, I contribute corn.
No,
Jack. You're so punk rock.
Come on.
Jack.
Corny.
You're a punk rock.
Imagine this was going to be my seamless transition. Imagine how Norman Bates felt.
That's it?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess you're talking about outsiders, right?
Yes, and about someone who didn't have any friends except for his mom. Mm-hmm. And, well, that's as far as I had thought it through.
That's a guy that if he had a grimecore band to be in, he wouldn't have murdered people.
That is so true, actually. Like, I mean, there's a couple of things I want to put on the board right off the bat based on that.
Me too.
Which is just... the homogenous society of like the 19, it took place in the early 60s, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So you had, like Jack was saying earlier, you had this very, there was a very regimented idea of a society member. Mm-hmm. There weren't these subcultures like we have today. And so where does Norman Bates fit in? Where does a taxidermist who likes to, I guess, dress up like his mother and kill people. Where does that, spoiler alert, by the way, where does that guy fit into society? What are his outlets?
Well,
I mean, he's one Reddit thread away from totally pacifying.
Right.
One Reddit community.
Really, though?
Lack of community.
I think, yes, absolutely.
I was going to say isolation for sure is a big part of it.
Wow. Let's put both of isolation, lack of community. He definitely was an outsider. He had, I don't think he had any friends. And
well,
we were talking about a boy's
best friend of his mother or something like
yes,
that.
Yes,
like,
he does say that.
That
and
one
that's
of his lines.
That's what makes Marion Crane stand up and say, "All right,
I gotta
I've had
go.
Enough."
Right. She's like, "And we're done. I got to go back to Phoenix.
I'm tired.
This sandwich, I'm full.
Just to be
the name of the number for the police, cuz I think I'm going to confess something.
He bore the confession out of her. Practically speaking, in terms of community, we can blame maybe highway expansion, because isn't it true that they moved the highway from the motel and it used to go right by the motel, and doesn't he say that? Like, oh, I used to have a lot more people staying.
Oh, wow.
That would be the development of the interstates. So the old smaller highways got kind of abandoned or discarded, and then they built the interstate system.
Right. Uh-huh. So he would have had maybe if there were more people coming to his motel, he would have slipped more slowly. Wow. Into
so
madness.
A literal isolation, like you literally couldn't find him because of expansion.
Yeah.
I'm just going to put what,
and that feels like, you know, sort of afterthought debris of like expansion. Right. Because he was sort of one of these old relics that sort of did not benefit from this expansion. It hurt him. And I'm just repeating what you guys say.
Great.
You're so smart, though.
I don't know if we can put this up on the board, but just because you brought up highway expansion, for me, now I know there are murders that happen in this film, but for me, the most alarming part of the film is when Marion Crane is driving and it starts raining and she, you can't see out of the car window.
What a great effect that was, right?
Yeah.
Her POV.
Yes. And I understand that it was meant to be so that later you see the flickering sign of the Bates Motel, right? But the fact that she didn't pull over, to me, is the most alarming, maybe character thing about her.
Is that reckless driving? What is that? Is that reckless?
A reckless way to live your life. You can't see. It's raining so hard. You don't even know if you're on the road still. I mean,
right. It's a failing of windshield wiper technology at the highest degree, which, by the way, I'd like to say, has not advanced that much since then. Wow. Windshield wipers are still terrible and ineffective and insufficient.
They come on by themselves, but they're still not good, but they just turn on their own. That's the development.
I don't have issues.
Yeah, it's like great, this broken coffee maker turns on itself.
Exactly.
Great, you have coffee at 2 a.m. But I have no issue with a windshield wiper. The only thing is I don't like the timing necessarily. The timing of the intermittent windshield wiper rarely matches, because rain doesn't come down consistent, or it's rare that rain is consistent. Sometimes it'll be a drizzle, but then it shifts. Mm-hmm. So you're having to constantly shift the tempo of the windshield wipers.
Uh-huh.
So to your guys' point, but I do think there is some technology that automatically, like, I think
my experience with the automatic setting is that it either over or under reacts at all times.
This is really
either
important.
Going way too fast or way too slow, and it's always 30 seconds behind the current status.
Yeah.
So Marion Crane, obviously, it's the 60s. Even with this new car she just got at the dealership, it does not come with this automatic windshield technology.
No.
And she's not alarmed. And for me, you know, that is telling.
Well, you got to think what's going on in her mind. She just stole much money. Like, she's already done something so risky that at this point, driving in recklessly in the rain is probably just like, whatever. Like, this is...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this everything's easy, really easy. Heightened I just for her cash. Too. Yeah,
I mean, I don't know if there's anything we can put there, but I think we're better off maybe just putting Norman Bates up on the board before we forget.
Let's put old wipers.
We'll put old wipers
on the board,
and the actual killer, Norman Bates.
Yep,
possible that Norman Bates has something to do with the Norman Bates murders. possibility.
Yes.
Can I ask the actors among us, which is all three of you? Have you ever seen a movie or done anything, acted
No.
anything where someone's
never seen a movie
where someone's eyes or your eyes were that wide open that much in a movie? Her eyes are, and I mean, it's awesome. It's clearly to effect. And then when she dies, you have a close up of her eye wide open, her eyes are just, there's very little blinking from her in this performance. I just like to commend it.
Yeah, yes. I've heard of that as a technique to be a more interesting actor on screen, actually. Like, and this is true, that the less you blink, the more interesting you are on camera. I'm not kidding. I'm a blinking mess. You catch me on screen, and those lids are going up and down nonstop.
Flipping and flopping.
But I'm serious.
I think it's a good call. You know, I'm trying to think of other actors who do that. I feel like Rami Malek. What's that guy's name? The guy.
Yes, totally.
That guy's always got his eyes way open. And he's like, he's got big old eyes. And he's always like, you always feel like he's leaning into his own kind of weirdness a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that kind of stuff kind of turns me off a little bit. But it's effective. He's got a face. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the actors in the...
Is Rami Malek to blame?
No, yeah. I don't think we can put him... Oh, no. All right. I got to say, you know, again, rewatching this film, it's like that scene with Marion Crane and Norman Bates in the back of, you know, back of the office is so spectacular.
I know. That scene is so good.
Such good acting. But we digress. We're not here to talk about the movie and how much we like it.
No.
We're here to talk about...
We have a job to do.
What?
The murders.
We're not here to talk about a movie. We're here to talk about the murder that happened within the movie. We're not here to talk
about it. Well, I guess exactly. That's a good point. Should we blame the movie makers? We can't go there,
no,
right?
We can't
don't
go
break
there.
The fourth
and we're not
wall.
Doing that. Yeah. We're going to try and perhaps blame the mother. Let's put her up on the board.
All right.
Okay. Now, yes, this is according Norma. To psychiatrist Dr. Fred Richman's ending monologue in Psycho.
Okay.
You have to go back 10 years to the time when Norman murdered his mother and her lover. Now he was already dangerously disturbed, had been ever since his father died. His mother was clinging, a clinging, demanding woman. And for years, the two of them lived as if there was no one else in the world. Then she met a man, and it seemed to Norman that she threw him over for this man. Now that pushed him over the line, and he killed them both. When he met your sister, he was touched by her, aroused by her. He wanted her. That set off the jealous mother, the quote, jealous mother, and mother killed the girl. In Psycho, Norman's mother, Norma, is somehow blamed for both abandoning her son and smothering him. Kathleen Rowe Carlin wrote in Unruly Girls, Unrepentant Mothers Writers, to be a mother is not an easy task in a culture where mothers can be blamed for being too present or not present enough. We all assume that mothers are associated with nurture, care, love, and protection. Yet why are we so fascinated and threatened with threatening mothers who do not fulfill those expectations? Those fantasies around the bad mother are often presented in the horror genre. The theme is so popular that it has become a subgenre, the maternal horror film. In maternal horror films, mothers are depicted as potential dangers for their children. In maternal horror films, the mother often abandons or is abandoned by the father, another element that contributes to the mother becoming dysfunctional. By assuming both the paternal and maternal role, the mother's presence becomes total and the child only has the mother to learn from. Patriarchal society believes that the dysfunctional mother endangers the child's social development by clinging onto him and refusing to cut the mother-child bond. So what do we think about the mother-child bond?
Everyone should go watch the movie Serial Mom, which is a great example of maternal horror, if you haven't seen it before. It just popped into my mind. Kathleen Turner, yeah. It's pretty amazing. It's like a comedic horror, really intense. She's like a crazy killer mom. It's great.
It's a delicate relationship, and if you have so much power over someone when you're their parent, right?
You are their maker. And the mother is the literal maker of the person. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
But
it's also crazy that we can't walk when we come out. That's
for like a while.
Yeah, like a really long time.
But here's the I just think it's so interesting that she is blamed for abandoning her son and for smothering him.
Well, let's keep in mind, though, what that actually means. She met a dude. Like, she met a guy. It's like, you tell me that. Could we really... I mean, this is the pinnacle of victim blaming here, is what we're doing. Is she is a victim of...
Okay. Yes, she is the literal victim of a murder, right. Technically. but... The real question is, can a mother's parenting of a child mm-hmm. turned that child into a schizophrenic. That's really what was the root of it.
And I would say that's just parenting, you know, like that. It doesn't have to be like a father can do the same thing. It's more like it's like the psychological or emotional abuse. Like that's really what we're getting at, right?
And the rearer of a child turn them into a villain, a murderous schizo.
Well, why don't we talk about dissociative identity disorder?
All right.
Okay. Right.
This is what psychiatrist Dr. Fred Richman's ending monologue refers to as being the problem with Norman Bates. Quote, he had to erase the crime of killing his mother, at least in his own mind. He stole her corpse, and that was still wasn't enough. So he began to think and speak for her, give her half his life, so to speak. At times, he could be both personalities, carrying on conversations. At other times, the mother half took over completely. Now, he was never all Norman, but he was often only mother. And because he was so pathologically jealous of her, he assumed that she was jealous of him. Therefore, if he felt a strong attraction to any other woman, the mother's side of him would go wild. This is according to Michael Kennedy from Screen Rant. Norman isn't simply putting on his deceased mother's clothes and killing people. He has an entire second persona in which he truly believes himself to be his mother. This used to be referred to as having multiple personalities, but is today clinically known as dissociative identity disorder. As later films would reveal, this was due to emotionally and physically abusive behavior by Norma Bates, who cultivated a quasi-incestuous relationship with her son and made him feel guilty for experiencing sexual feelings. Thus, when Norman gets turned on, he can't cope, and mother emerges to murder the object of his desire, such as Marion.
Jeez.
So that's a nurture explanation, mm-hmm. right? Versus nature.
Yes.
That explanation is that this dissociative disorder that he has is rooted in the way he was raised,
right.
as opposed to that he was born with it.
Now, the only thing is that
you can start to blame Norma a little bit.
You can start to get there. I can see that for sure. But in Michael Kennedy's Screen Rant clip here, he says that later films would reveal this is due to emotional and physically abusive behavior. So, but my question is, you know, which what is he talking about? That the AMC show, Bates Motel or whatever?
Possibly any
there
of the follow-up.
Sequels.
Yeah.
Some of the sequels.
And there like were sequels.
The 90s
so I guess my question mm-hmm. is, though, like, who are we considering to be the creator of these characters? Like, are we just taking all the stuff that has come out in under this name?
Or
there's the book, original book. So, you know, maybe we could have read that, or maybe we can each break up.
Is your question that we're just isolating it to the movie? And
I guess my question is that, like, you know, we don't really know, I guess, based on the movie, what the upbringing was like.
Well,
that's sure. Yeah, that's fair. Well, yeah, right. Because the psychiatrist at the end is he's kind of this is his hypothesis, right? He's mm-hmm, not there's mm-hmm. no proof. I'll just like to say that if Norma is to blame, that is circuitous suicide. That is a very long and circuitous because they're saying she's to blame in her own death,
right?
That's very complicated. She basically created her murderer.
Right, right.
Whoa.
She then executed her murder. I would say not intentional on her end that to be the victim of
wow.
that.
Wow.
Maybe it's the lack of mental health or how therapy was viewed in the 1960s and the fact that if he had better access to something like that, he might have been able to manage his... His demons.
Yeah, I mean, this is really the 50s, right? Because this movie came out in 1960.
Yes.
So culturally, this is all like kind of rooted in
The 50s.
The 50s, which, you know, to what Chris was saying earlier about like, you know, the subcultural development wasn't really there yet. This is all the problems of the 50s is what created the 60s. So we're talking about, you know, only just beginning dawnings of psychotherapy mm-hmm. in culture. And it's cool because it's in the movie so featured, right?
Yeah, it really is.
Chris, maybe you look up while we're doing this, just look up how it would have been called multiple personalities at the time was treated. What was the treatment for multiple personalities in the 50s?
I incorrectly said schizophrenia. I guess my lack of knowledge about this kind of thing. Is this dissociative disorder a more nuanced and better and current version of what people would call schizophrenia? Or it wasn't schizophrenia sort of synonymous with multiple personality disorder?
I don't know. We should look that up.
I think I misused that.
I think they're two separate things.
Oh, okay.
But we should ask our expert, right?
Yeah. I made sure to not be too prepared when I came
okay. on. Okay. Okay. Just a quick Google search has told me schizophrenia is not the same as multiple personality disorder, or more accurately, dissociative identity disorder. A person with schizophrenia doesn't have two different personalities. Instead, they have false ideas or have lost touch with reality. Multiple personality disorder is unrelated. So here we know. Oh, we're learning as great. We go.
Great. Apologies to the community.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No. What we can maybe call it is what we have in the past, which is untreated mental illness.
Mm-hmm. I put lack of mental health resources, but do you want to say, do you want to add untreated mental illness as well?
Untreated.
Or is it together?
What it is, dissociative identity
That's
disorder.
On here too.
Okay, perfect.
Which may or may not have been created by Norman.
Right. We don't know because we didn't read the book. We just saw the movie.
And we didn't read the DSM-5 either. Because I'm wondering if it's possible to have this dissociative disorder to be born with it. If we even know that. If that's even something that's possible.
That's a good question. Another thing we'll have to ask the expert.
No, I got to be honest with you guys. As we know, in the 50s, it wasn't great, mental health treatments.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time, I'm seeing that electroshock therapy was very common.
Ooh, yeah.
They would just do that a couple times a week, zap you into a kind of like
an electric shock,
vegetative state.
Electroshock therapy was used for pretty much every mental illness.
It was, like menopause, what else?
Right.
Well, it was used for
a grumpy lady. Right. Would
just shock
get
them.
It.
I went down a rabbit hole into the actor Anthony Perkins, who plays Norman Bates, and he had electroshock therapy he was going through
conversion therapy.
Yes. So he was an actor who I guess was a very, open as open as you could be in those times as an openly gay man. He had multiple relationships and partners. And apparently there was this therapist or a psychotherapist called Mildred. Oh, I'm forgetting her last name. Mildred Newman, I believe. Mildred Newman. And she was known for conversion therapy, and he and his partner at the time, Groves was his name, decided that they wanted to go through with this process so that they could, I guess, become straight and
quote normal back in the 50s, right?
Wow. Well, this would have been in the 70s.
Right.
He went through electroshock therapy and he couldn't, couldn't remember lines. Like, it really affected him, and he did end up marrying a woman who, strangely, Wikipedia page really got weirder and weirder as I read on, died in what she was on one of the planes during 9/11.
Oh, wow.
So he died in the 90s due to complications from AIDS. He was HIV positive or he had AIDS. And then she died in 9/11 on the plane.
A lot of tragedy.
A lot.
Jeez, that is so deeply
sad. That's a lot of tragedy. a lot of which was did not need to happen. A lot of unnecessary tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, conversion therapy is getting banned in a lot of states, thankfully.
I can't believe they're still seems like doing it.
To bring it back to the world that he's living in, Norman Bates, like this kind of seems like the real wild, wild west of like mental health times, mm-hmm. where it's just like, you're not normal, throw him in an institution, kind of do whatever you know, like we just kind of discarded those people. Mm-hmm.
It talks about it that in that scene, right?
Yes, yeah. In the big monologue.
Talking about, yeah, I mean, he has this whole thing about he gets. That's where you first see Norman.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The real person is when she brings up maybe your mother needs to be, you know, put somewhere mm-hmm. else, and it just
sets him off.
You see, you sets him off.
Yeah,
and you see him rant about. Being, you know, about mental institutions and about how vicious they are and awful.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. I know that we're running out of time, so I want to put up Edible Rage as well on the board.
Not to be confused with Edible Arrangement.
No.
Different.
What is the difference between those two? I always get those confused.
Not much.
Edible Rage. Okay. The best known of Freud's theories about childhood sexuality is named from the mythological king Oedipus, who killed his father and married his mother. As Freud described the complex, a young boy sexually attracted to his mother, and as a result, he desires to kill his father in order to possess the mother. This forbidden desire is then repressed only to return later in neurotic form. As Norman Bates tells Marion Crane, quote, a boy's best friend is his mother. Journalist Bidi Shamamada of The Guardian said, Norman Bates loves his mother so much that he cannot bear her desire for another man. In a fit of jealousy, he kills her and her lover. He has never grown out of this childlike Oedipal rage. He is ashamed of his sexual desires and projects his self-loathing onto the women he murders. Instead of taking responsibility for murdering women, he blames another woman, his mother. He takes on her guise to inhibit her, and he tells himself in another massive act of projection that in the murders he is acting out his mother's jealousy towards the women he desires. A lot of layers happening here.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's interesting a lot of these layers are with one thing that's surprisingly underneath a lot of these layers is a guilty conscience that he has. There's a lot of like him being guilty and not being able to live with himself for having murdered his mom, and so he has to create a split narrative or a split identity. Like he has like a conscience, mm-hmm. but he's a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He has to, it's like he's coping. That's how he copes, because right. he does have a conscience.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the coping mechanisms are and end up enabling the murderousness.
Yes.
Very complicated.
Very complicated. And like he says, we all go a little mad sometimes. I think what makes the movie so, I don't know, relatable is that...
Going a little mad sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, but just because, like Jack is saying, though, it's like there's an awareness or something of the behavior, and it is this weird temporary, you know, emotionally driven kind of transient kind of experience, right? It's not that he's just a Looney Tune who's going around killing people. It's that he's a guy, he's a person just like anybody. And it's and what's so great about the movie is that how it starts is that the woman she has a fit of you know,
it's like impulse control.
Like exactly.
They can't control these impulses.
She's like, fuck it, I'm taking this money. It's like, and then clearly, you know, reckoning with that. And she sadly, before she's able to, you know, she decides to return the money, but then is killed before she can go back. So it's the difference between, you know, Bates who cleans up after the mess he or his, you know, his right. physical he's made. Or her who, you know, gets these pangs of guilt and, you know, she's like, all right, I got it. Let me turn around and bring this money back.
And you kind of that is manifest for her in these monologues that she keeps hearing in her head, right?
Right.
So she's imagining the conversations that everyone back home is saying about her.
Right.
I mean, it's such a good movie.
Yeah, it's great. But the impulse control, maybe impulse control, lack of impulse control is maybe to...
Yeah,
put that down. Yeah,
Clay. Yeah. I love that. Mm-hmm. Okay, is there anything else we want to throw on this list before we get started knocking him off?
And just to be clear, we're not including any, the people who created the story that we're talking.
No. Okay. This is a story. We're treating the story as if it's the factual events that occurred.
You know, I'm going to call that is the Big Bang, trap. It's like, we can't go, there's a certain line we can't go to. That is like, well, we can't blame the Big Bang Theory for create, because like sometimes we do earthquakes, Jack.
Plate tectonics.
Yeah, it's like hard to figure out who's to blame in an earthquake, and then you can't go and blame the Big Bang for creating existence. You know what I mean? So because of this,
right? And how did that matter get there in the first place?
Right, right. And in this case, there's a similar kind of. I mean, you know, Hitchcock is, or the writer of the book is like a god in a sense.
Okay, great.
Okay, so. Let's take a quick break and then we'll start knocking things off the list.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Who is to blame for Psycho, the Norman Bates murders? Homogeneous 1950s society? Isolation? Lack of community? Interstate expansion? Reckless driving? Old windshield wipers? Norman Bates? Norma Bates, the mother? Abusive parenting? Untreated dissociative identity disorder, lack of mental health resources, Oedipal rage, going a little mad sometimes, or poor impulse control.
Wow.
I would just like to say that poor impulse control is like when you eat a third cookie.
Sure.
Sure. I mean, that's a...
so much when you murder your mom, her lover, and two people.
Yeah, that does assume that we all have that impulse all the time to murder.
It's not buying anything on the line waiting to check out at a Nordstrom rack. They have all that cool stuff and those like...
those little thing tchotchkes you don't need.
Yes, caramel popcorn.
Well, I think if you add someone's impulse control who already has other mental health, you know, it's like if you're a quote healthy, normal person, yes, your impulse control is I'm not going to have the third cookie. But if you're dealing with bigger demons, you... we all have the thought, what if I killed my friend? You know what I mean? But like, if
we do, Clayton? Maybe, I'm sorry, we do?
You know, like in a situation like, oh my God, what if I don't want to kill you. I don't want to kill you. I'm just saying. We all have the dark thoughts. Like, what
it's
if
opening
I,
opening
you know?
The door on the highway. Like, we all have that yes. like, impulse.
Opening the door on the highway. Well, I've never thought of that.
You don't?
No, but
it doesn't like
I
pass
do imagine,
through your mind?
No, I imagine car crashes happening to me all the time.
Sure.
That it's right. a similar thing. It's like
if I just drove my car into this pole right now, right? Like, but yeah. the person who's struggling might actually—that's their impulse control.
Wow.
It's like they would do something like that versus having the third cookie. It seems trivial,
but I think to Clayton's point, there are bigger things at play than just the impulse control.
Yes.
The impulse control feels like a
layer.
Yeah,
so we can take that off of the list. I also think we can take off reckless driving and the old windshield wipers.
Yes.
Yeah. Although still important issues in and of themselves.
Yeah, and alarming for sure.
But if those windshield wipers were better, she might never have stopped at the she might have just pushed on straight.
I mean, we could
Paris
have blamed the rain too, because if it wasn't raining, would she have stopped?
That's another big bang.
Yeah.
Maybe if the windshield wipers were worse, she would have gotten in a little fender bender and never made it to the motel and then survived.
This is a movie
that the wipers are too good.
I guess for the time, the wipers were too good for her time. Okay. So we're not going to blame that. Interstate
expansion.
I like it.
Can go.
I'll tell you, though, I like it because it does, speak to his isolation.
Well, it's also like you can sort of broaden that out and say development in general, you know, favors certain areas over others, you know,
right.
and I'm sure higher tax paying areas get favored over other lower tax paying areas. So what about expansion and how are we treating, you know, how are these decisions getting made? But, you know, I it feels a bit smaller.
Go ahead, Jack.
I would also say that similarly, isolation and lack of community are, in a way, downstream of Norma's parenting.
Hmm.
I think,
right. They're just less potent.
The abusive parenting or Norma mm-hmm. herself really is like kind of at the apex of like all the issues that Norman had.
Yeah.
Right.
You could imagine the internet expands and he had a better parent and who helped foster community still somehow, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So let's take isolation and lack of community off because they were brought on by someone versus someone who was looking for a community and just couldn't, you know, have access to one.
Right.
Right. I mean, she actively made it so that he only had her.
Right.
Mm.
So those fold into
Norma.
The homogenous 1950s society. What do we think about that?
Man, see, to me, that plays a lot into, I think, a lot of our failures is that we just didn't allow for people to feel free to express themselves. And then when you start to talk about Anthony Perkins' real life and you start to see what he did because he felt like such an outsider and because society and the cultural norms were so oppressive, that really makes me upset, and it makes me really
want vengeance against the 1950s.
Oh my God, I'm such an idiot. Hearing you say it's the first time I realized that Norman is a play on the word norm.
Normal.
Normal.
Oh.
That me too. Well,
I mean, we're all idiots.
If you're an idiot, I'm a bigger idiot.
Oh.
Yeah, the norm. Yeah. Well, what's interesting about the casting is that he does look like, I mean, she was nervous around every other person she came across since taking that money. And then when she saw him, she was put it right at ease. Like she was not nervous around him even remotely. She calmed down. She's like, oh, I can handle this guy. He's just like a normal, like nervous guy.
Charming. Very charming. Charming.
You know, yeah, self-aware, whatever. Anyway,
as serial killers tend to be.
Yes.
So I think what we're getting at is like two different approaches on this, one being kind of structural or like exterior, and one being kind of interior, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Either the exterior elements like the society and things like that, or it's internal elements like the shaping of his personality or his psychological problems. Mm-hmm. Two different approaches.
Yeah. What's going to win?
I personally lean towards the internal.
Interesting.
When it comes to the act as extreme as murder, especially multiple murders.
Yeah.
Sure.
I would posit that no external force can turn someone into a murderer. Whereas internal forces or things that shape your psyche, that create your personality, order are what allow for that kind of thing.
Say it, Clay.
I would say war is like an external thing that could happen to you that could turn someone into a murderer, right?
You know what? That's really true. But my counter to that is that when you go into the military, they have to turn you into someone who can kill.
Mm.
You don't right? They have to make you psychologically right. into someone who's capable of doing it.
Truth. I guess I'm thinking it more like what's going on right now. Like if suddenly someone's invade, like if it's not like you join the war, but suddenly someone is invading, you have to defend yourself and suddenly find yourself in a situation where you're like carrying a gun and I guess I'm a murderer now. I'm going to kill someone.
Oh, wow.
That's a great point. Yeah, no, that's a great point.
We digress. We digress. I agree.
Yeah.
I'm wondering here what I think we can take going a little mad sometimes off of the list because it feels like he was going mad. Not sometimes consistently for 10 years.
Yeah,
right, because she's
been
dead.
No, that's
mom's been dead.
Going a little mad sometimes is like when Chris breaks his cell phone screen
because
he threw it down because he went a little mad sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like Marion Crane went a little mad.
Right now,
you know, but that's not what was happening with Norman. I don't think.
Right.
I also feel like we could fold lack of mental health resource into the homogenous 1950s society, right? Because
sure,
that is a result mm-hmm. of that type of society.
And I guess you can fold untreated dissociative identity disorder because that didn't even exist. They didn't even know what that was back then. You can roll that all. You can roll that up into mental health resources, or
well, I could roll that up into abusive parenting. To me, I think, well, we don't know for sure if this is something he was born with or not, right. or if that's even possible. But I think that's kind of a core question is where did that come from? Did that come from Norma's abusive parenting?
Well, I don't think that this is, and I don't know this for sure, but I don't think that assuming that the mental illness only comes from the abusive parenting.
Yes.
I don't think that, because I think, you know, it can come from many different things, right? So I think we can take abusive parenting off and keep Norma on. We can fold that into Norma.
Okay.
Okay.
So we're left with homogenous 1950s society, Norman Bates himself, the mother, Norma Bates, untreated dissociative identity disorder, and Oedipal rage.
Wow.
And Oedipal arrangements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you have Oedipal rage about your Oedipal arrangements,
yeah,
you're in trouble.
If Norman just had a honeydew melon at the end of a plastic stick, I mean, might he even be in this mess?
Well, if it's shaped like a flower, he might have been happy.
Yeah.
With a grape in the middle.
I think we have to me, if I had to narrow it down,
okay,
I'm going to take a swing.
Yeah.
Co-blame Norma and Norman.
Wow.
Wow.
It's a family affair, the whole thing.
I mean,
so
they
if
would
we blame
really
them, and then we slap what?
Oh,
the
God,
50s.
Wait a second. Just as I say that, now I feel like maybe I can't blame Norman. I have to blame the disorder. Shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Can you blame Norman if he really has a disorder so severe? He didn't want to have this disorder, did he?
No.
He didn't, like,
I mean, to me, that speaks to if without the disorder, you don't have the murders, right?
Right.
Okay, yeah, great. Well, I don't know. The way the shrink at the end started to talk about it, it was almost as if the disorder developed after he murdered his mom, after the
other right. Yes, that's the idea. That was his way of coping with the fact that he did murder his mother because he, you know, she was.
That's okay. Fascinating.
Well, we can't blame something that happened after the murder or the first batch of murders.
That's fascinating because was the original, because that line now rings particularly important, which is going a little mad sometimes, because if that was what he basically said happened to him when he killed his mother, then you can lay that at Norman. You can say that Norman is responsible for that murder.
Yes.
And if that set off his disorder, which if, you know, then the disorder was responsible for the other, it was still sort of started with Norman and his going a little mad.
Right. So we're back full circle. Back to
I'd be
Norman.
Comfortable. I'd be comfortable scrapping the disorder just due to the, if we just go based on the psychiatrist at the end, it's like, assessment, which was that the disorder developed post initial two murders.
Right.
Okay.
And we are
so Oedipal rage would be in a chronology before
right
the disorder.
So,
but I don't think that takes Norma off of the table because her the way she raised him
didn't help.
Led to the Oedipal
the dynamic in which
yeah
exactly. Yeah.
So
to
okay
me, then it goes back to homogenous 1950s.
Me
society
too. That's why I'm like I go back and forth whether we slap the 50s or we send them to the jail.
I feel like it's the perfect peachy dish to create this world in which you can have a oppressive, abusive parent
yes
who is isolating their child and abusing them, which then results in like
but then I go suit back and I'm like, not everyone in the 50s murdered people.
No, but a lot of serial killers came out of the 50s.
That's
right,
true.
Jesus.
So
yeah, again, oh, just a little bit of Reddit. Just a little
that's
bit
it
of Reddit.
That's it. Just somebody to talk to.
Okay,
really.
we need to make a decision
a
here.
Yeah.
Taxidermy community.
Exactly.
That's right. He could have found his people.
Right.
All right, we need to come down.
We need to come down. And I think ultimately, I do think we need to, we do need to blame Norman, I think.
Okay.
And we can do what we could do is blame Norman and slap Norma, or we could send Norma as well to jail.
I kind of like Jack's pitch
to do them both,
Norman and Norma to jail.
Yeah, because they do seem to be one, aka Norma Norman.
Yeah, I think it's sort of,
I mean,
yeah,
thematically completely.
Yeah,
yes, thematically,
and they literally are one.
And that
right
way we get to slap the homogenous 1950s.
Yes,
okay,
I like that.
Yeah, I love that.
I love it. I'm gonna call it homogenous 1950s society. You're getting the big slap. Norma and Norman, you're going to the alarmist jail.
Wow.
The whole Bates family is in there. Wow. I feel good about this.
Me too.
This is usually what happens. You feel good about it and then...
You talk to an expert and you feel stupid.
Yep. Yep.
We rinse and repeat. We
That's
wipe
right.
the
That's
windows.
How we do it.
We wipe the rain off the window.
We're just a bad wiper over here. Jack, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us get to the bottom of who's to blame for these serial murders that happened at the Bates Hotel. Motel.
Thank you so much. I love the podcast and I love all of you.
Oh. We love you too, Jack. In the aftermath, following the 1960 release of the film Psycho, five subsequent films and a television series explored the life and psyche of Norman Bates. Psycho became one of the most recognizable films ever made. Visit our website and let us know who you think is to blame at www.thealarmistpodcast.com and follow us on Instagram at The Alarmist Podcast and on Twitter at AlarmistThe. You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clayton Early, with fact-checking by Chris Smith and editing by Molly Hockey. Additional writing by Anastasia Kousakis. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Alex Paul. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado-Smith and the Erios Network. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the Central Park Five.
Erios. Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.